Welcome to your commercial-free, uninterrupted investment show, sponsored by the SEC-registered investment firm, Wilsey Asset Management, a fiduciary firm owned and operated by President Brent Wilsey, who has been putting clients' investment needs first for over 40 years. The Smart Investing Show has been giving unbiased financial information for over 27 years on local radio stations right here in San Diego, providing you with fundamental analysis on stocks and investments you want to know about. Now, here are your hosts, Brent and Chase Wilsey.
Well, hello and welcome to Smart Investing Show. I'm Brent Wilsey, president of Wilsey Asset Management. Great to have you here today. Got a lot of great things to talk about. We're going to kick off the day because on Friday, yes, we had the payroll report release. We're going to discuss that, talk about in detail what it means for you investing and the economy. Also, to talk about job openings that goes with the jobs report, but little kind of the same thing, but gives you more information about job openings, not so much the payroll. And then also, too, talk about Microsoft and OpenAI, some interesting things there. Lawsuits are starting to mount. Could that be a problem for Microsoft? And then we also have Peloton. Well, Peloton, you may remember them from the COVID days. A lot of changes there. Not good. We'll discuss that as well. With me is Chase. Chase, what do you got?
Yeah, got a lot of great things to talk about here. Obviously, always like to break down some companies that are kind of prevalent in the news. One that you might have heard of before, but we're going to take a closer look at Tesla. They reported earnings last week. They've kind of been in the news as of late. The stock, I'll tell you, has done well. We'll give you some reasons why I'm going to say we're concerned about it. Also, too, I think you gave me this one to test my reading ability, but the name of the company is, I'm going to say Albemarle or Albemarle. They're in the lithium space. And the last one, too, we talk about jobs. Let's take a look at Manpower. I think that'll be an interesting one. So we got three good companies here. As I said, we'll break down the fundamentals of those three companies and give you our opinion if we think it's a buy, sell, or potentially a hold.
All right. Well, let's jump into the jobs report, the labor market here. And non-farm payrolls increased by 175,000 in the month of April. While this was well below the estimate of 240,000 jobs, this may actually be a big positive. Having that type of growth still shows the labor market is on good footing. But to combat the Fed's inflation concerns, it's nice to see a labor market that is not too hot. Previous revisions also weren't a major concern. March was revised up 12,000 to a gain of 315,000, and February was revised lower by 34,000 to gain of 236,000 jobs.
Yeah, and this is important because I've seen before where there might be a big miss either to the upside or downside on the labor number, but then all of a sudden the revisions kind of counteracted that, where that wasn't the case this time around. But speaking of this April's report, looking at areas of strength, it continued to include healthcare, social assistance. That was a major part of it, as that grew 87,000 in the month of April. Transportation, warehousing, that was up 20,100. And retail trade, I was kind of surprised by that. That also was up about 20,000 as well. Some areas actually saw minor losses, including mining and logging, down 3,000. Professional and business services, down 4,000. And information was down 8,000. So a lot of the professional and business services decline actually came from temporary help needed. So that may be not as problematic as one may believe. Also, too, with wage inflation being a major concern, I'd say the biggest data point was average hourly earnings growth of 3.9%, missed the expectation of 4%. Not a huge miss, but still a miss indeed. And this was a decline from March's reading of 4.1% and actually marked the lowest reading since the Fed started hiking interest rates in 2022. So again, it looks like the inflation concerns, while slowly decelerating, are still decelerating nonetheless. And I got to say here, overall, I was quite pleased with the job numbers, as I do believe it shows a cooling labor market that still remains healthy. You can't say the labor market is now in a bad spot because the labor payroll number missed the headline number, or excuse me, the expected number. I mean, 175,000 jobs in the month of April, it's still a good number at the end of the day.
And you can tell it's a good number because I think prior to this jobs report, the Fed may not reduce interest rates at all. Now they're saying, well, maybe it will be once or twice. So this is, again, I think you said a healthy jobs market, and it really is because you're still growing the economy. People, their pay is up 3.9%. I think that could be slowing down somewhat, because I think what boosted a lot was after the auto talks and the entertainment, the writers and stuff, where they got the boost in pay. Well, that's now months behind us. So now we're back to maybe a more normal label market where it's still increasing year over year, but you don't have that big effect from the unions that they had initially, I think, again, probably 6 months ago already.
Yeah, and actually, I know I'm going to table some of that thought, because we do talk about the employment cost index and then the job openings in kind of our next area. So I do have some more thoughts on that, but I think we should get into the next post and then kind of revisit that conversation.
Okay. Yeah. And I did want to say, too, though, the professional business services down 4,000. I still think that could be perhaps from mortgage brokers, the real estate side kind of slowing down because rates were up. So that could be why, and they could be coming back on those jobs. But
and as I said, there's a lot of temp help.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, let's move on to job openings, because this is another positive, I will call it, because at the end of March, job openings totaled 8.5 million. Now, this missed the estimate of 8.7 million and was lower compared to the previous month's reading of 8.8 million. Now, compared to last year, job openings were down 1.1 million. While this all sounds like bad news, we believe it's a positive. To start, pre-COVID, we never had seen a reading of over 8 million job openings, which means there's still plenty of available work for those that are looking. Also, when there are too many available jobs, it creates more competition for workers, which many times leads to wage pressures. And in theory, well, that puts pressure on inflation.
Yeah, and also, too, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but the labor market has remained resilient. But I believe we need to continue to see some softening to assist with inflationary concerns. This report, the JOLTS report, it came after the employment cost index actually spooked markets earlier in the week, as the employment cost index rose 1.2% in the first 3 months of the year versus an expectation of 1%. Compared to last year's first quarter, wages and benefits rose 4.2%, which matched Q4's reading and is off the multi-decade high of 5.1% in 2022. Now, wages make up about 70% of employment costs, and they increased 4.3% compared to last year, while benefit costs increased 3.7%. Now, this is kind of what you were talking about, but one other note to consider is that union workers saw a larger increase than non-union employees in the quarter. As we lap the impact from the union negotiations that concluded late last year, we will likely see a smaller increase from union jobs in the report. I mean, we know obviously the auto workers got huge pay hikes at the end of the year. So as we lap that, you know, maybe Q4 this year, Q1 next year, I don't think you'll see as much pressure from those areas, which then should not cause as many concerns on the employment index, which then is just another measure. I mean, this is one thing too, is there's so many measures for looking at wage pressures at the end of the day.
And again, I talked about how there's less job openings. So therefore, you know, for employers to hire somebody, like, well, you know, there's not as much competition for that job. So you don't have competition. Like, well, you want me, you got to pay me more. That is going to slow down, but it's still going to be a positive. It's not like it's negative. I think back prior to COVID, I think job openings was maybe around 4, maybe 5 million. So still, even though it was down, 8 million job openings is still very healthy. And if you quit your job, you probably are more than likely to get a job, another job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did want to kind of circle back to the concept of the Federal Reserve, obviously. And, you know, I really have been thinking a lot. And, you know, we were never in the camp of 7-8 hikes to right. begin the year. Now, we thought initially, you thought 3, I thought maybe 4. I've really tempered back and now really think it'll be 1-2. Big reason for that, I was kind of looking through the calendar, and the Fed meets, let's see, 5 more times this year. So they meet in June, July, September, November, and December. I really think June is off the table, because I think even if they got good inflation data in the month of March, I'm sorry, in the month of May, I don't think that they would say, oh, okay, great, we'll cut rates. I think they want to see maybe 2 good months of data, now that they had some questionable data, I'd say, in April. I don't think it was anything bad in April, but I think they'd want to see 2 good months before cutting. So, I mean, maybe July, I think more likely September would be. I don't think they would cut in back-to-back meetings either. I think you might see maybe a cut in September and then maybe a cut in December.
And it's possible, not likely, and I believe the Fed meets after the PC comes out in June. Is that, do you know the calendar on that?
I can't. I don't know the release of the PC.
I believe that they usually meet afterwards. I could be wrong on that. But if we have a bad, or actually, I guess a good inflation number, they could look at maybe cutting in June, but it has to be really a very good inflation report. That'd be 2.
And actually, I know April it was like end of April is when March PCE came out. So it might be end of June. They meet They meet June 11th, June 12th. So unlikely we'll see PCE from May. So that's why I really think June is just, frankly, not even likely to be on the table at all.
Yeah, could be, best case scenario, could be in July. But just on the current data, and data changes very quickly. So that's why we do this every month, to keep you informed of what's going on. And just because we say something in January doesn't mean, okay, that's going to be for the whole year. No, we keep you updated on what is going on, so you are a smarter investor.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be understanding that the data is dynamic, and you know your opinion and your outlook, it needs to change as the data changes, essentially. Yeah. And you know that's kind of where I'm looking at now in terms of, again, maybe 1 to 2 rate cuts rather than the 4 that I initially thought. But also, too, the big thing is, and I'm not going to get too much into it. If you want more information, you got to get the newsletter, which we'll promote here. But really talked about how the Fed's pulling back on their quantitative tightening, which is a much more complicated issue. But that's also another form of easement that they can consider to help reduce the monetary tightness that they kind of have in place currently.
Yeah, we thought about discussing that on air, but it's very complicated. Something you really have to read. We try to always make things easier for you, but that is just hard. You've got to read through it and slow down a little bit. And again, if you want to get that, go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. That's smartinvesting2000.com. And right in the middle page newsletter, sign up for it there. Make sure you go back, because you'll get next Friday's, but you won't get this Friday's, which goes out at 5.
So. Yeah, and I was going to say the big positive as well is Powell really essentially took the idea of a rate hike off the table, which that was something that I didn't see any information on why that would be a case. But, you know, at least now he kind of really tempered those concerns that we might have a rate hike.
Yeah, I think on Friday the 10-year Treasury was down, I think, under 4, I want to say under 4.5. I think
it did fall under 4.5, but it ended the day at looks like 4.52.
4.52. So, but still better than, I think it did touch over 4.6, 4.7. Anyways, let's move on to Microsoft and OpenAI, because I'm very curious to see how lawsuits against Microsoft and OpenAI over copyright infringements play out. Late last year, the New York Times announced a lawsuit, and now 8 newspaper publishers in California, Colorado, Illinois, Florida, Minnesota, and New York have claimed Microsoft and OpenAI use millions of these articles without payment or permission. All 8 publishers fall under the ownership of hedge fund Alden Global Capital, and include names like Denver Post, Chicago Tribune, and the New York Daily News. The current GPT-4 LLM will outperform near verbatim copies of significant portions of the publisher's works when prompted to do so. The complaint said it also showed several examples of ChatGPT and the co-pilot allegedly doing so.
Now, if these companies are able to win, I do worry it could open the floodgates, and other content providers could then claim the same infractions. And I mean, you're not just talking about news publications at this point, or, you know, I mean, in theory, you have books and, you know, a lot of authors that have content out there on the web that they're not being paid or compensated for. I mean, it's a big potential problem, I think. Yeah. If these go the right way, I don't know how large the lawsuits could get in terms of who could sue over copyright infringement. So it's definitely something to really keep an eye out on. And the other thing I got to point out here is ChatGPT also received more bad news, with competitor Anthropic announcing its first enterprise offering in a free iPhone app. Anthropic was founded by ex-OpenAI research executives and has backers that include Amazon, Google, and Salesforce. Its Claude 3 model can reportedly summarize up to about 150,000 words and convert the large data sets into summaries in the form of a memo, letter, or story as well. For comparison, I guess ChatGPT can handle about 3,000 words. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but 150,000 is a heck of a lot better than 3,000. Now, overall, the AI space remains very early on to try and pick winners, and I believe many investors will be disappointed a few years down the road as they unfortunately picked the wrong horse to bet on.
And it is a problem, too, and I don't see how that Microsoft and ChatGPT can get away with this, because if you're a artist of any kind, music or writing a book or articles and papers, whatever, you need to be paid for your work. And I don't see how they can get around that, because it's just the way things are. and then how are they going to do that, because it's so large? I'm almost thinking this would be a very difficult thing for AI, because if you can't say who did it, how you got it, it's so big that you constantly have these lawsuits of authors and publishers suing you.
Well, and the problem is, ChatGPT is not creating anything at this point in time. They are just actually taking information that somebody else created and regurgitating it. So if all of a sudden you wipe out journalists because, ChatGPT has taken over that role, well, now who's going to be creating the content for ChatGPT to pull it from? I mean, there's a whole issue still with AI. And I mean, you and I talked in the office the other day. I still believe there's many ways that we can use AI to even enhance our business, make it more efficient. But there's still a lot of question marks with it. And people want that to be here now, but it's just simply not. Now, I don't know if it's going to be Anthropic. I don't know if it's going to be ChatGPT. I don't know if it's going to be Meta. I know they have some kind of competitor in this space as well. And obviously Gemini with Google. I mean, there's all these players. I don't know who's going to win yet. Could be, private companies. We don't know who's going to win in the AI space. I think people, they get sucked into this hype and they fall for it. And all of a sudden, maybe 5 years down the road, it's not OpenAI, it's not Microsoft, but you've been betting on Microsoft because you thought they were going to be the winner and they turned out not to be. So, I mean, that's just one thing that I think the AI space is just, it's too early to tell who's going to be the dominant force here.
And I can tell you who will win. That's a consumer, because this will benefit consumers. And we're looking at businesses. We're seeing more businesses that will benefit from AI. But again, you've got to be so careful investing, saying, I know that Apple's going to come out with something. Microsoft has, obviously. And it's just like, we're so early in the game. A lot of this reminds me of the EV cars. And they went way up. And then as reality set in, which is starting to happen, they went way down. Not to say Microsoft's going to fall dramatically, but it could, because so much of their stock price, and virtually anybody, you're on your conference call, you say, AI, stock goes up.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, it's, again, all the rage right now, but things can change very quickly.
Well, speaking of hype, let's talk about Peloton, because Peloton is known for its high-end exercise bikes and could do no wrong during the pandemic, as the stock price quickly climbed to an all-time high of $171.09 on January 13, 2021. If you've not been following this company, it continues to lose money and the stock continues to fall. It recently fell below $3 per share.
Yeah, and it's definitely something that's quite crazy. The company actually fired the CEO after earnings. He had a great reputation for turning around businesses and running companies, but it appears there was nothing he could do to fix this company. If you hold the stock, it's probably a good idea to sell it, as I worried the company could announce bankruptcy potentially sometime this year. I wonder if you own the bike, should you sell that as well? Because there will be nowhere to get replacement parts if this company were to file bankruptcy. As you said many times for the past couple of years, these bikes will become great clothes hangers, and well, that could even be more likely if they do file bankruptcy and no replacement parts are available.
And you may have made money on this if you were a trader and you bought the stock and you sold it during the pandemic. That might have been a big positive. However, what happens is that you bought this stock, and whenever we invest, we want to buy in businesses, invest longer term. If you try that with Peloton, say, wow, they got this great product. They've got the subscriptions, which is huge. That's really helpful because it's ongoing revenue coming in. This company could do no wrong. But we did say back during the pandemic, what does happen when gyms open back up and people go back to gyms? Exactly what we thought happened. Well, I'm going to ride a Peloton. I'd rather be with people than some video with people.
And I just don't see how they get a path to profitability. I mean, that's my big concern. And it's funny, I saw they were actually up 9% yesterday. Mm-hmm. Don't know why, but still the stock price is like $3.42. I mean, you're still down like 98% from the high. but it's just something that, gosh, I look at it and I don't know how this company gets through it. And in theory, what could happen is, they go bankrupt and somebody buys up the assets in bankruptcy. I don't know why anybody would buy the company now. I think it'd be much more likely to have them go bankrupt and then scoop up the assets in bankruptcy.
Yeah, because there's really no benefit to it. I mean, you had these subscriptions, which I would imagine be going down because if the bike is sitting in the corner of the bedroom, not riding it, you're not going to – although some people forget about the subscriptions, probably are still paying. It's on your credit card every month. You probably don't see it. But I'd say overall those subscriptions are declining. And the bike, I've seen a couple of them in gyms when we go on vacation and stuff, and it's just like – you know, yeah, it's there, but it's not like it's, in my opinion, better than any other bike.
And I'm not sure if subscriptions are declining. I just know that obviously they're not growing fast enough at the very least to point towards profitability. And it's definitely not the excitement it was. I mean, I think I have like two friends that are still very pro Peloton.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, there's still people out there that love their Peloton. So don't get me wrong. I mean, it's still got a kind of that ride or die, so to speak, audience. And there's still some people that love them. But I just don't think it's going to be enough to necessarily keep the company afloat.
And I don't have any data to back it up, but I would have to think the subscriptions are falling because you're not using the bike. You went back to the gym. And again, unless it's one of these subscriptions which you just forgot about, why would you keep the subscription if you're not going to ride the bike any longer?
I know some people will go to the gym and do the bike from home, like once a week, twice a week. So it's not like you can't only ride the bike. You know, that's not a great workout routine. You're not getting your upper body. I guess they do have that app, but I think a lot of people that do use it, I could be wrong, but just my inclination is that people supplement it with the gym.
Yeah. Well, I still think these subscriptions are down, but nothing to back that up. Just my personal opinion that I would imagine that be the case. If you like this information, there's a lot more to our newsletters. I mean, we talk about luxury homes, paying cash for them. We talk about the S&P 500, reasons why investing in businesses is so great. We mentioned about the Federal Reserve to understand what's going on with quantitative easing, quantitative tightening, what the Fed is doing. That's all in the newsletter. Go to the website, smartinvesting2000.com. That's smartinvesting2000.com. Again, right in the middle of the page. See the newsletter, click on that. You can sign up for copies coming out. Goes out every Friday at 5:00. You can also see past issues there as well. So take a look, and I think you'll enjoy it. And any questions, give us a call. So
yeah, absolutely.
All righty. Well, let's move on, talk about financial planning. And for that, we always talk to our CFP, our financial planner, Harrison Johnson. Harrison, how you doing today? Harrison there? Harrison? Did we lose them? Well, what we can do while we're waiting for Harrison, I don't know where he is. So let me know if he comes up there. We need to start looking at the companies because we didn't want to take a look at Tesla. And Tesla's been in the news. I mean, their stock's been, you know, on a wild ride, we'll say, for the last few months. And Tesla, their symbol is TSLA. We'll talk more about the company, what's going on. Let's kind of take a look at the numbers first here. They are in the industry of auto manufacturers. Only 3.7% short on the stock. I'm surprised on this. Institutional owned only 45.8%. They may have a big individual owning because it's kind of like I'll call it a cult stock is what I'll actually call it. A lot of people, yeah, you laugh at it.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true. Yeah, I know it. So we do see a PE ratio very high, 46.4 versus 23.4. Price to sales also extremely high, 6.7 versus 0.7. Price to book value, 9.1 versus 4. And price to cash flow, wow, also very expensive, 57.5 versus 9. So very hard to say this company's on sale. I will say the PEG ratio going forward is better than the industry. It is 4.6 versus 9.6. So that is one positive for Tesla there. Look at their earnings per share growth, up 15%. Now that is half the industry growth of 30.1. And their sales growth over the past year up 10.1%, not as good as the industry, up 13.9. We do see a 5-year growth rate on the company, earnings per share growth, 15.3% for Tesla. That is better than the industry, up 8%. They still do not pay a dividend. We do see the current ratio on the balance sheet, 1.7 versus 1.6. That's good. They have kept their debt in check. It's only 0.2 versus 0.7. Looking at the net profit margin, they still have a good profit margin of 14.4 versus 6.2. I know they have cut the prices on their vehicles, which may show up in future quarters. But right now, so at 4.4 is still pretty attractive. And the return on equity is 21.2. Versus 15 for the industry. Chase, what do you got going forward?
As the current price here for Tesla, it's $181.19. See the 52-week low here, $138.80, and the high, I mean, still even with the rally after earnings, the high is still $299.29, and that's just the 52-week high. I know it was even higher than that.
Yeah,
that's
well over 300, I think, at one point.
I was trying to pull that up. Yeah, it looks like it was even 370. No, it's over 400 was the high.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely down quite dramatically still from those levels. But going forward, I mean, still looking at the valuation of this company, I mean, the estimates December 2025, $3.61. It gives us a target sell price. It's almost laughable, but $59.93. The stock still trades at about 50 times future earnings. And I have to point out the spread is just tremendous. I mean, the low analyst thinks $1.65 and the high thinks $7.67. I mean, that's again this cult stock where I think some people are so in love with it. I don't know how they're going to get to estimated 40% earnings growth for between 2024 to 2025. I don't know how they get that, honestly.
Well, we can talk about that, but I do see that the estimate of the last 90 days going forward, that is down 25%. So even the analysts are saying, you know, this company is not going to do well. We can talk about how they reported earnings. The things that Elon Musk came out with were just kind of, and he's known for this, where he says things. Remember that sports car? That was supposed to come out. Remember the truck finally came out. The Cybertruck came out, what, years later. Now he's talking about the robo.
What do you mean now? He's been talking about this for years. I mean, they missed on earnings. They missed on sales. They had negative free cash flow. Auto sales were down 13% compared to the same period last year. So all the numbers were terrible. The stock started going up after Elon started talking about robo-taxis, AI, and the potential for a new affordable EV model, maybe in early 2025, if not late this year, was the quote.
You wanted to get that out, didn't you?
I did want to get that out. It just drives me crazy. And, you know, I like a lot of things Elon does, but it's just not true. I mean, he started talking about full autonomy in 2015.
Yeah.
I mean, where are we now? In 2016, said a Tesla car could make it across country without requiring a human driver before the end of 2017.
When did he say that?
2016.
Oh, wow.
And then in 2019, he said that on a call that would help him raise about $2 billion, that Musk said Tesla would have 1 million robo-taxi-ready vehicles on the road in 2020. I mean, this is just stuff that is just so far off. It just makes no sense.
And General Motors and Waymo from Google, I think they're way ahead in the situation here in the United States because all the filings, the testing. Tesla's done none of that. I think they're talking about China. But here in the U.S., it's going to be years before you can see anything robo-taxi from Tesla here.
They're not even talking about autonomous in China. They're talking about their full self-driving technology will be available in China. They already have that here in the U.S. Yeah. Not the autonomy. I mean, it's just stuff that I think people, they hear buzzwords and they buy the stock. It's just, it's ludicrous. And I think people are going to get burned again on Tesla. I think that the stock will continue to fall when the actual numbers come to fruition.
Yeah, well, I got the numbers on analysts, which you normally don't look at, but got to go to the break here. You're listening to the Smart Investing Show. Brett and Chase, stay with us. We'll be back, right back. We'll be talking about other companies as well. Alrighty, welcome back to Smart Investing Show. We got a lot to still cover. We got to finish up on Tesla because during the break, Chase is talking. Oh, there's so much more I got to say. I got to talk about Tesla. I mean, we want to make sure we get the point across for Tesla. We're also going to talk about Albemarle, Manpower. We got other things to talk about that we want to go over. So Chase, let's go back to Tesla. We normally do not look at the analyst ratings. You know, we just don't care if they say strong buy, hold, or whatever. But I am shocked to see that out of 30 analysts, only 6 give it a strong buy, 2 a buy, 16 say hold. Now, in the industry, a hold is a weak sell because of the fact that some companies, they still want that business with the company, the financial business, that they won't put a sell on it, so they'll say hold. But in the industry, under the table, it's known as a weak sell. And then 6 analysts give it a strong sell. I have not seen any companies in my 40 years that I can remember like a Tesla that make it set many strong sells. What is your issue with Tesla?
I probably shouldn't say this, but I will.
Go ahead.
It kind of reminds me of Donald Trump because Tesla, you either love him or you hate him. And it's the same.
It's a political talk show now.
But I mean, that's kind of like you. I think on these analysts too. I mean, you have people that they love Tesla and they hate Tesla because I mean the numbers make no sense. And you know the thing that that got news on earlier this week and sent the stock higher was in China. They're going to look at allowing full self-driving, but that's not, again, meaning that they're going to have full self-driving vehicles. They already have full self-driving here in the U.S. And actually, California, the DMV here is suing Tesla because they're saying it engaged in false advertising and marketing concerning its driver's assistance programs, autopilot, and full self-driving, because it's not full self-driving. I think it is misleading. I completely agree. I think that is false advertising at the end of the day, but it's just something that they're years away from full autonomy. They haven't even applied for licenses to get self-driving robo-taxis on the roads, as you mentioned, Waymo and Cruise. Right. They actually had that going. And you think, even if Tesla has the technology for autonomous vehicles, do you think the DMVs and the regulators are going to be like, oh, we love Tesla so much. Sure, yeah. Just get your autonomous vehicles on the road tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's the government, which also remember, like, he's going to be paid, what was it, $50 billion he wanted to be paid? Was that his number? The government and him are not, and I like Elon Musk. I think he's done some great things, but I don't think the government favors him all that much, other than he's the second or third richest man in the country.
Well, and the thing you have to understand is Cruise, when they were operating in San Francisco, they did prove that they were safer than a human driver, but then they had the incident where they hit the woman. And again, long story, it wasn't the autonomous vehicle's fault. Another car hit the woman, then hit the Cruise vehicle.
Yep.
But it has to be 100%, I think, before they'll allow robo-taxis. And I think that is, frankly, I think 5-10 years a minimum away before something like this actually is on the road full-time across the states.
Yeah, I remember Waymo and Cruise, I believe they were testing like 1 million or 2 million miles. I mean, it was going on all the time. Tesla has tested zero with full autonomy.
Well, that's not true.
Oh, it's not true.
The one thing Tesla does have, and I'll give them, is they do have all the data from their drivers. So they do have the mapping, they have the data, so they have that there. But again, until it is tested
right,
with no human interaction at scale, I just don't see how there's any progress made. And yeah. I think it'd have to be going on. I think I read that Waymo's been doing this since like 2012, and here we are in 2024.
Still not allowed.
And still not allowed full-time. And, you know, Phoenix, they do have them on the roads, but it's not really at scale, I would say.
And when I first read it, and I think a lot of people have taken this as a misunderstanding, because when I first read it, I thought in China, because China doesn't have the regulations we have here, they will have full autonomy on China roads, but that is not the case. You described it that it's not full autonomy. It's, what did you call it again? It
was full self-driving.
Full self-driving. So that's not full autonomy. That's a different thing.
Yeah, it's what's already offered in Teslas here in the U.S., and it's just, I think people, again, they fall in love with it, and it's just something you got to be careful, and you got to read deeper into this. And frankly, the numbers for Tesla are very concerning, considering their autos aren't selling right now. And
right.
In China, even now that they can offer their full self-driving technology, I mean, BYD, Xiaomi, those auto manufacturers there, I think NIO is the other one. I mean, they are doing very well. And I think if anybody's going to get to autonomous vehicles in China, it's not going to be Tesla.
Yeah, I just don't see it. And again, he's very good at hyping stuff and making things sound pretty good. And that's why you have your Tesla lovers, which they don't look at this as a business. And again, I think the Tesla car is a great car. I don't like EV cars, but I think it's a great car. But it's just way overhyped and way too pricey.
I mean, that's the exact point. I mean, the business is fine. The business is a good business. Don't get me wrong. It's just the stock is just great. You can't trade it 50 times earnings as an auto manufacturer.
Right, right. So, well, while we're on the EV side with Tesla, let's talk about this company called Albert Merle. That's the way I think we say it. It's a strange company. I've never seen it before. But what got me onto this company was the price of lithium has dropped like 60%, actually down 80% since peaking in 2022. And everybody, I remember back, 2021, 22, lithium, got to buy companies with that. It's going to go way up. Well, it went way up. I think it went up to about $80,000 per metric ton. And now it's down to about $11,000 per metric ton. So it's come way down. And Albert Merle, the way I'll say it, is actually a company that develops that. So you may have bought that company. Their symbol's ALB. And I'm kind of curious because now could be the time to buy this company because you want to buy and invest in companies when things are down, which the EV market is down. And I don't think the EV market's going to go away. The growth has slowed way down. I think the growth is now about 16% per year. And Chase, you know, I've talked about this before. As the when the market's small, it's very easy to grow at 30, 40, 50%. But as that market gets bigger, to grow at those levels becomes much harder because you have a larger base to grow it off of. So they're down about 16% on the EV side.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just larger numbers are, I mean, it just means now you have to get more and more numbers to make the numbers larger. It's harder.
Yep.
I mean, very simply, you have $10 and you get another $10. Well, wow, that's 100% gain. But now you have to get $20 to get the 100. And obviously, as the numbers get bigger and bigger, yep, it gets harder and harder.
We love numbers. Numbers are great. They can tell you some good stories, but you got to understand them. So, well, let's move on. Talk about Abermale. And their symbol is ALB. They're in the special chemicals industry. Now, here's a good start. I say that because short, the float is about 13.7%. So you got some shorts on there, which means if things turn around, I always say if oil goes up more, then actually I think EVs will become popular again. So with that short of 13.7%, that in my opinion could be a positive. Unfortunately, though, when we start off with a PE ratio, it is high, 46.5 versus 35.5. Price of sales, 1.8. That is the same as the industry. Price to book value, 2, which is very good compared to the special chemicals industry of 58.5. Price of cash flow, 21.5 versus 13.5. So I wish that was lower. Now, we do see, unfortunately, because of the decline in lithium prices, their earnings over the past year are down 91.2%. Compare that to the industry, down 0.7%. Sales, they're down 4.3%. The industry down 3.2%. The company does have a 5-year earnings per share growth estimate of a negative 8.8%. The industry is a positive 5.5%. They do pay a dividend, 1.3%. They use 58% of the earnings to pay that out. Take a look at the balance sheet. They got a current ratio, very good, 2.8 versus 1.6. Remember, current ratio, you want that higher, but the debt to equity, you want that lower. And that's what you'll find in this company, 0.3 versus 0.9. Net profit margin, they do have one, 4% versus 5.5. Return on equity, not very good, 2.8 versus 14 for the industry. Chase, what do you got going forward here?
Yeah, so current price here again for Albemarle Corporation, ticker symbol ALB, is 128.10. I was going to make a joke here that, you know, maybe people will count and see how many different ways we say this company's name.
I think we said about 3 or 4 different ways. We really don't know how to say this company. We'd spell it on air, but you take a look like, yeah, how do you say this company?
But again, the current price is 128.10. 52-week low here, $106.69. The 52-week high, $247.44. And I do look back to 2022. It looks like that's when lithium was obviously doing quite well, I'd presume. Stock was about $325, it looks like. So
wow,
it's been cut basically by a third, I'll say, obviously, yeah, rounding up drastically. But going forward, I go out again to December. 2025 is what we look at. I see estimated earnings per share here is $7.94. It gives us a target sell price of $131.80. So it trades at a forward PE of very close to 16. I'd definitely be in our hold category. Not much estimated growth on that stock price based off the current value. I will say as well, it looks like the analysts are anticipating lithium to turn around because they're expecting earnings growth of about 154% from 2024 to 2025. And similar to Tesla, I mean, the earnings disparity is huge. I mean, the low is $3.90 and the high is $13.17. So it's a very, I'm going to say, uncertain market.
And you know, this could be a good way to invest in this company. And by the way, we use two different services. The service I show for December 2025 shows $8.89, substantially higher than what you have of 25 analysts. But what I was thinking is that if you want to invest in this company, and again, it seems like it's a little bit too pricey now, but a great way to do it, I think, would be invest in, I'm going to throw it out there, ExxonMobil and this company. Because I do believe if oil goes up, this company will go up as well. Oil goes down, this company is going to go down. So
other way. Right?
Other way.
Oil or no. Yeah, you're right.
Actually, it wouldn't be a good way because if oil goes up, Exxon's going to do well, and they'll do well also. So this doesn't work what I was thinking. It'd be the same. It's not the opposite. I was trying to think of a hedge.
A hedge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, with I don't know the end use market for lithium. I know that sometimes I go to the store and I see Energizer has some lithium batteries as well. you know, I mean, are there other potential use cases for lithium outside of EVs that could be beneficial as well? I mean, there could be maybe some potential there, and then it wouldn't just hinge off the EV market, because I do think the EV market was extremely overhyped in terms of us getting there by 2030, 2035, and having 100% of vehicles be EVs. There's
right.
no way.
Right.
So I'd be curious, if I was looking at this company, if potentially there was more use cases for lithium.
And actually, going back 90 days, those Ford earnings estimates have fallen by 50%.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, this there may be more downside on this. So I think it's almost worth watching, because EVs are not going to go away. They're going to be there. I think the growth rate now, I think I said also already, but it's about 16%. But it's going to be here. So it's something to maybe look at to participate in the electric vehicle market. So, and again, maybe even other places as well.
I mean, because a lot of people look at copper as another one, but you know, lithium's a pretty clear one to look at as well. So there's definitely ways to participate in the EV market if you think that's kind of the future we're heading in.
Yeah. But I remember reading some of the numbers. I mean, copper was great as well. But and we talk about, don't think it's just going to be combustion engines and EVs. We've talked about biodiesel. We've talked about hydrogen. I do believe down the road, 5-10 years, you'll have multiple choices on the way to buy a vehicle that powers by different choices, not just gas or.
I'm thinking that'll be, I think, years down the road, because it'd be hard to create the supply for that in terms of, like, one of the EV's big knocks right now is the charging stations. So, you know, if we do have another drivetrain system come into play, well, now we'd have to build out the network for fueling that vehicle as well. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think we'll get to that point. It's just hard to know exactly what that future looks like, obviously.
And we'll share with our listeners, too. I mean, we hold in our portfolio a energy company, and we are debating about, do we, because it's pulled back. When will these energy companies get to the point where they don't grow any longer? And it's very hard to know when to make that. But we're a little bit hesitant, because we own this energy company. We've done very, very well with it over the years. We're up many, many times. But is this going to keep recovering, or is energy going to start declining with oil?
So. Yeah, and it doesn't even have to disappear, but it's hard to be. You don't want to be in a declining business at the end of the day.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to get out of that business. And again, it will always be there, but you don't want a company that has a declining every year, because we like to buy businesses where we see their earnings go up every year and the business is growing, not declining. So, but just a tip for you on what we're looking at. You know, we had the job market, and one thing we talked about, that as the jobs decline out there, the job openings, people might say, gee, a little bit hard to find a job. Maybe I need help here. Maybe I need to go to a manpower to help me get the next job. And they do staffing and employment services. That's their industry. So we thought we'd take a look at manpower. Their symbol is MAN, and see what they look like. Now, only 3.8% is held on the short side, so don't expect it to fall. Very high PE, unfortunately, 71.4 versus 25.1. And by the way, we don't look at these ahead of time for air. We kind of look at the concept and say, let's look at it on air. And I think there's been times over the years with the radio show where we did this and we said, that's a good company. Maybe we should look at it for our own portfolio. We do see price of sales 0.2 versus 1.4. Price of book value 38.7 versus 110. And price of cash flow 11.1 versus 18. Unfortunately, no PEG ratio. The industry is at 6.2. Wow, something's going on with manpower. Their earnings per share are down 74.5% over the past year, when the industry saw an increase in the earnings of 5.4%. Even the sales for manpower, well, they're better. They're down 2.7%. The industry is flat. And the five-year earnings growth rate on the from the analysts here, they say manpower look for earnings to decline by 11.3%. versus an increase of 8.9. So there could be some problems with manpower. They do pay a decent dividend, however, a 3.9%, but they use 165% of their earnings to pay that out. And then on the balance sheet, got a current ratio of 1.2 versus 1.3. They are set up with a debt to equity of 0.6 versus 1.1. So they could weather a storm. They're not wouldn't go into bankruptcy. And I just don't see how, if jobs slowed down, how they would not benefit. But you really got to understand what happened to them over the past year. They do have a profit margin, a net profit margin of 0.5 versus 5.3, and return on equity 4% versus 62.6. And these are in the past. Chase, you got things going forward. Maybe look a little bit better for Manpower.
Yeah, so current price here for Manpower, again, their ticker symbol is MAN, M-A-N, $75.56. See the 52-week range here, the low $67.35, and the high here, $88.91. I was kind of reading through some stuff I couldn't get too far into, but I did see something about how Europe macro to continue weighing on growth recovery. So I'm not sure how global this business is, if they have different geographies that they operate in, if it's predominantly U.S., that's obviously something I'd want to look at, because obviously while we've had a very strong labor market here in the U.S., how are the other markets that they potentially operate in holding up? With that said, though, looking at those earnings going forward, I go out to December 2025, I see estimated earnings per share of $6.65. It does give us a target sell price of $110.39. Forward PE, 11.46, 11.5, it looks like. So, I mean, it's, I'd say, pretty attractive in terms of those forward earnings. Also, too, looking at the estimated growth from 2024 to 2025, we're looking at about a 31% growth rate after earnings are estimated to decline about 16% in 2024. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know why earnings would fall and then reaccelerate. I would presume with a healthy job market, I mean, I guess maybe if it's a healthy job market, people don't need these services as much.
And it could be non-operational. It could be something else. Maybe they sold something at a loss and they had to account for it. Could be an impairment charge. There's so many things that can happen. That's why we always talk about when you're, you know, we love doing this. We love managing money for people and so forth. But if you're doing it yourself and you say, oh, it's not that hard to do, these are things you have to look at and understand. Because if you don't, you will get, not maybe, you will get over some period of time, you'll get hit by some surprise. That's not a good surprise because you didn't know something about that business. So important, we always say before we invest in anything, 10, 15, 20 hours of research. Right now we're looking at a company that we're pretty excited about, finding some things that look pretty good, but we still have questions. So we haven't pulled the trigger yet until we get those answer those questions, and also to make sure we get the right price for it. I do want to point out that we are having some technical difficulties, and next week we will have Harrison Johnson, our CFP, doing financial planning with his tips. That'll be next week. Also to Robert Behick from Countywide Mortgage. Actually, his son Austin was going to fill in today. Couldn't have him come on air either because of technical problems. So they will be back next week on the Smart Investing Show. I just want to let you know that. So they did not get cut from the show. Technical problems happens. So
technology.
Yes, technology. I love technology. You know, we talked about Tesla.
Should we? No.
Yeah. You want to go back to it? Do you want to talk about a normal car company and see how they're doing? I'm thinking Ford. You know, I mean, Ford, their symbol is what, F.
Yep.
And
I will say while you're pulling that up there is, you know, we've talked a lot about how EVs have slowed in terms of, I'm going to say, the excitement. The sales are not slowing in EVs, but the growth rate is definitely slowing, or what we say is decelerating.
Right.
I still believe for your legacy auto manufacturers, this is a huge benefit for Ford, General Motors, Stellantis, because they don't make much money off the EVs, or in fact, they lose money.
Yeah, they lose money. Yeah.
So the longer that ICE portfolio, the internal combustion engine, remains around, I mean, they can, I'm going to say, milk the profits and continue the profits for their companies. I think that's a great benefit for, I'm going to say, in particular, Ford and GM.
And that's one thing I'm thinking, too, is that, and I don't know this for sure because, you know, just what I've seen, I believe General Motors has far excelled Ford in the growth of their equity or their stock. So I'm wondering if Ford is lagging. Could Ford be the next one to turn around and do extremely well? Let's take a look at the numbers. So,
I mean, what time frame are you talking here?
I'd say over the last 12 to 18 months.
I think over the last 3 months, GM's done well. But I think over, like, Ford was actually doing pretty well before that. compared to GM. GM was going through some issues, but yeah, I think you're right. I think over the last few months, GM has definitely done well with their stock buyback.
Do you have the capability on your computer to look at the comparison of the two?
I was trying to do it.
Can't do it?
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll let you work out a little bit more because I'm going to go over these numbers here on the financials for Ford Motor Company. Their symbol is F. They're in the auto manufacturers industry. Only 4% short on the float. We do see that they have a P.E. ratio pretty good, 12.8 versus 23.4. Price to sales, 0.3 versus 0.7. Price to tangible book value, 1.2 versus 4. And price of cash flow is only 3.7 for Ford versus 9 for the industry. Now, we do see the earnings are up 32.9% over the past year. That is better than the industry, up 30.1. We also see sales climb by 7.5%, not as good as the industry growth at 13.9. They do get a five-year growth rate, their earnings per share, of a negative 4.7%. The industry is a positive 8. They do pay a nice dividend, 4.8%. Use only 61% of the earnings to pay that out, so I like that. Take a look at the balance sheet. They've got a current ratio of 1.2 versus 1.6. Debt equity sounds bad, 3.5 versus 0.7, but remember, a lot of car companies like Ford and General Motors do carry the accounts receivable when they people borrow against a car on their financial side, so that's a number you have to understand. We do see net profit margin 2.2, not very good compared to the industry at 6.2. Return on equity 9.2 versus 15, and even return on invested capital is only 2.7 for Ford. Gosh, Chase, you got to really get me excited here on the earnings going forward, because so far I'm not liking Ford. I think I like General Motors better.
Yeah, well, current price here for Ford, $12.43. See, the 52-week range, the low is $9.49 and the high $15.20. I did find a nice little chart here, actually, that does detail it.
What you got?
So over the last 1 year, Ford is up 6.96%, while GM is up 38.12%. Ooh. But over the last 3 years, Ford is up 13.9%, and GM is actually down 21.5%. So, as I said, I know that GM had some big news at the end of the year as they really bought back a lot of stock. I know they had good Q1 earnings. I think the last few months have been really great for GM, but Ford kind of, I think, prior to that was doing better in terms of the stock performance. At the very least, I'm not sure about the business comparison, but
right.
You know, the stock price was doing very well before GM had that surge at the end of 2023. Looking going forward, though, for Ford, I go to December 2025, I see estimated earnings per share here, $1.95. Gives us a target sell price of $32.37. And I'll tell you, I mean, that looks just like an astronomical gain. I mean, it trades at about 6.5 times estimated earnings for 2025. I mean, we again sell at 16.6, but it's always hard, I'll tell you, with cyclical companies. I don't think that Ford, GM, they'll get to that kind of market multiple, essentially, because their business is so cyclical. Unless your name is Tesla, then you can trade at 50 times earnings.
Yeah, love that, Tesla. You know, I looked at a balance sheet for Ford. And like General Motors, they had a lot of cash. Ford does have $34.4 billion on their balance sheet right now, their last reported earnings. It is down from $40 billion in 2023, but that's a lot of cash. I think General Motors used about $10 billion to buy back stock. Can you imagine if Ford did that, brought it down to $24 billion? They may be holding on to that much cash because of spending on the EV side. But gosh, take some of that cash and do a stock buyback.
Yeah, I mean, that's what sent, obviously, as we said, GM stock a lot higher. I will say Ford does have a nicer dividend than GM does, so maybe they're preserving some of that cash just to ensure that they can make dividend payments throughout potentially hard times as well.
Well, Ford also has good cash flow. The last 12 months, their cash flow from operations was $13.5 billion. So you got good cash flow, a lot of cash. I think the executive of Ford, or the CEO, like, yeah, let's buy back some stock.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a buyback plan in place, but you know, it's always great, and we love when companies buy back stock. We always tell people it's a great benefit because they reduce the shares outstanding, which means you as a shareholder own more of the company, which means you get more of the earnings. Obviously, in theory, the earnings stays the same, but now the earnings per share would then increase because there's less shares outstanding, which then can reduce the PE multiple because of the function between price and the earnings per share. So, I mean, it's a great value creator. I will say, though, you got to be careful. I don't like when companies buy back stock when they're too expensive, because that could be problematic if you buy back stock and the stock goes down 30-40%. It's like, well, that was a waste of capital.
And we've seen that happen. The other thing, too, you want to make sure that the company, and I've seen this happen over my years of doing this, where they borrow money to buy back stock and at a high price. That's even worse.
Yeah, then you got interest payments and a declining stock price. It's like, wow, that was a great investment.
And then also, too, keep in mind when they talk about the stock buybacks, they do not have to do it. So you want to watch it to make sure they do it. They can say, yeah, we're going to do a stock buyback of $1 billion over the next 18 months. They are not required to do that. They will try to do it, but they're not required to do it. So you could get that short-term bump. And if the company doesn't actually start doing it, like I think GM actually did do it, but a lot of companies will talk about it, they'll get that short-term bump, and then people forget about it, and they never do it. Not all companies, but sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, overall, though, I'd say Ford, I'm intrigued by it. It would be one that is worthwhile, I think, further research.
Yeah, worth the research. Well, there's a closing bell. Thank you for listening to the Smart Investing Show. It is for informational purposes only and should not be used as investment advice. If you'd like to discuss in more detail your investment needs, have other investment questions, feel free to call myself, Brent Wilsey, or Chase Wilsey at 858-224-0004. That's 858-224-0004. If you missed part of the show, you can listen to my podcast. Go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. Again, that's smartinvesting2000.com. A lot of great information there. Sign up for the newsletter. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week right here on the Smart Investing Show.
So amusing to think I did all that.